from KQED.
From KQED Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose, I'm Dave Iverson. Coming up in our first hour of Forum this morning, San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed sits down with us for a one-on-one interview. The mayor is having to navigate some bumpy times these days with the recent resignation of the city's police chief, a spike in crime this summer, and an ongoing debate over pension reform for city employees. We'll talk with the mayor about his plans to build back up both a slimmed-down police force and slimmed-down city coffers as we broadcast live from KQED Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. In June, San Jose voters overwhelmingly passed Measure B, a pension reform move that requires current city employees to contribute more to their pensions or accept more modest benefits. New employees will be placed in a less expensive retirement plan. The vote was seen as a huge victory for Mayor Chuck Reed, who argued that the city had to get its fiscal house in order, an effort that had also included prior efforts to trim the pay of city employees by 10%. But the rest of the summer provided bleaker headlines: a spike in crime, an exodus of police officers, culminating with the surprising resignation of Police Chief Chris Moore. Mayor Reed recently put forward his plan for how to build back the police department, and he joins us this morning here in San Jose to talk about that, as well as other issues facing the city. Mayor Reed, good morning.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you here. If you had to do it all over again, given the difficult summer that you've had, would you still push as hard for Measure B?
Yes, I don't think there would be any difference in what we needed to do, because we were faced with such difficult choices that the alternatives are worse. And you have to look at Measure B in combination with the other things that we've done, because we have a fiscal reform plan that the council approved in 2011, and there are other elements to it, but you have to look at the whole package to see what we're doing to solve the problem. The problem being trying to avoid service level insolvency as we made cut over 10 years, shrinking not only the police department, shrinking the fire department, and shrinking the rest of the city services. At some point in the life of the city, you realize that you're not going to have the capacity to provide services to the people, and that is our mission.
So would your argument be that you've got to, if you had not pushed for Measure B, and if the city voters here hadn't passed it so overwhelmingly, that you'd actually be in worse shape, that you would have had to cut back even further?
Well, the Measure B is part of what we're doing, so it's a combination. So Measure B will save us the money to begin to restore services as we start getting the savings from it. So we essentially don't have any savings yet for Measure B. So you have to look at what we did in the preceding couple of years, including a 10% cut for everybody in the city. That 10% cut in pay allowed us to save hundreds of jobs, including jobs of 150 police officers that would have been laid off if we hadn't done the 10% cut. Well, of course, there's going to be negative impacts from a 10% cut in pay. Nobody wanted to take a 10% cut in pay, and it was a hardship on many of our employees. But the alternative was laying off 400 or 500 more people, including 150 police officers. And so the council decided that we had to draw the line, begin to focus on reducing the costs instead of reducing our workforce. And that's what we did in 2011. And then Measure B is the next step, is how to avoid future problems like that by saving on pensions.
It's always hard to know cause and effect, but what's your view of the spike in crime that's happened in San Jose this year, particularly the murder rate on track to perhaps exceed what's happened in the past, the spike in the number of murders in August in particular, when you went through that rough patch of 8 murders in 11 days? Do you see a direct correlation between that spike and the reduction in the size of the city's police force?
I don't think there are very many criminologists or statisticians or economists that would give you a cause and effect relationship on a spike in homicides with the size of a police force. There's just no direct relationship. And so I don't think a spike up or a spike down can be attributed to the increase or decrease in the size of a force. There are impacts from having a smaller force, but that homicide one is probably not any kind of a direct relationship. And so we had a spike down in homicides over the last month. We had zero. So when you're dealing with small numbers, you know, 30 to 40 in a city of a million, those numbers fluctuate, and that happens with statistics like that. So some years it goes up, some years it goes down. There's not always a way to know why that happens.
Is that, though, part of also why this has been such an issue of intense concern, sometimes controversy, because San Jose has had this long reputation for being one of the country's safest cities?
Well, certainly. Our people are accustomed to being a safe city, and they want to stay that way, as do I, and as do the men and women of our police department. So the fact that we remain a safe big city is good, but there are troubling problems that we face. And the homicide spike that we had in early August was one of those. But we have other areas where crime has started to move in the wrong direction, even though we're still at very low rates compared to other cities. We don't want to go in a bad direction. And so that has me concerned. It has the chief concerned, and has our community concerned. So the question is, what do we do about that, given the resources we have? And the size of the department is a factor in responding to these upticks in crime.
I want to get to your plan for how to rebuild that in a moment, but I also want to play back something for you and for our audience from the Chief Chris Moore, who's still on the job but announced his resignation not long ago. Shortly before he announced his resignation, he was on one of our programs, and he had this to say about what he felt was the impact of a smaller police force on how safe San Jose could continue to be.
We have now gotten to a point in my belief that we just do not have enough to basically handle the basic beat structure, at least to the level of service that our community has become accustomed. And that's what it comes down to, is I think there's still an expectation on the part of the public that we're going to be able to do what we always did with 350 fewer officers, and that's just clearly not the case. So you see that reflected in extended response times. You see that reflected in our inability to even investigate certain crimes.
Police Chief Chris Moore, do you concur with that, that there is that sort of, even though there may not be a direct effect in terms of the spike in crime, but there definitely is slower response times, there are things that the community has to get used to that's different from the way it was before?
Well, that's certainly correct. If you look at the response times, our response times, even though they're far better than Oakland and San Francisco on priority one calls, have gone up by about 40 seconds on average. So that's not a huge increase, but it's moving in the wrong direction. Our response times on priority two calls have gone up a lot more than that, but still far better than the other cities, other big cities. So while we take some pride in being better than other big cities in the country and other big cities in the Bay Area, that doesn't mean that we're complacent about it, and that's not good enough. We're used to being one of the safest big cities in the country, and we want to stay that way. We don't want to give that up.
So how are you going to do that? You wrote a piece for the San Jose Mercury recently, sort of outlining your plan. You've had close to, I think, 90 police officers resign since the beginning of 2011. Again, always difficult to determine cause and effect and why those resignations have taken place. But you're short. You're short a number of officers. What are you going to do to try to build that back?
Well, the first step was to make a policy decision which the council has made, is that we're not going to continue to cut the workforce in order to cope with rising costs, that we're going to deal directly with the rising costs, because in the police department, for example, over the last decade, we've increased the budget by nearly $100 million, but yet we have less police officers than we had 10 years ago. And that's because the costs have risen so much faster than our ability to have additional revenues. So we first made the policy decision, okay, that's no longer acceptable. We can't continue shrinking the force. And the 10% pay cut that everybody took was part of that, and controlling the cost of pensions is the other part. Because if police officers cost over $200,000 a year, which is what they're costing us now, you can't have as many.
And they cost that much in terms of combination of salary benefits?
salary and benefits. That's what they cost us. Now, that's not what they get to take home.
Right.
That's the cost to the city. And so if we're going to hire more police officers, the cost is an important factor. So if you have an extra $1 million, you can only hire so many at that cost. If you can bring the cost down, you can hire more. So the number of officers is related to the cost of the officer. So first thing was we decided, okay, we're going to begin to control costs. And so the 10% pay cut and the pension reforms are part of controlling the costs. Now the question is, what do we do in the short run? We've had resignations, retirements. We always do. I think the resignations have been higher than usual. So we have a force that is small to begin with. On a per capita basis, we are pretty small compared to other big cities, and we're currently about 5% under the authorized staffing. Authorized staffing is about a little over 1,100, and we're down around 50 or so. So we need to get the authorized staffing back up to that number. In the shortest of short runs, we're using overtime. So if we're 5% below authorized staffing, we can make up most of that with overtime. And so our officers have been working harder and doing it on overtime. So you can't prolong that forever. That's not a long-term solution, but it's an immediate solution. A shorter solution, shorter-run solution, is to take a look at how we can incentivize officers to stay and how we can incentivize officers to transfer to San Jose, because the training time for lateral hires is much less than a new recruit going through the academy.
How are you going to do that when pay has been cut by 10%?
Well, we're going to try to figure out what additional incentives could we put in place that we can afford that would incentivize people maybe to stay. So if it's money, and money is always an important incentive, one of the things that we could do is to look at performance pay for existing officers, so that if they want to do certain things, they can make more money. Now, many officers are making more money through the overtime, but that doesn't work for everybody. So we're going to ask the staff to identify some of the things that we could do to incentivize performance.
Does that mean performance-based raises? And if so, how are you going to deal with, inevitably, what union response might be to that particular question?
Well, I can't worry too much about the union response, because we have to figure out what will work and what the right thing it is, and then work through the process that we have with our unions, meet and confer and negotiate these things out, and eventually we'll get to a solution. So the fact that it's difficult shouldn't dissuade us from doing what we think is the right thing. So let me give you one example of a performance pay incentive that could be helpful. It would be good if all of our police officers were in excellent physical shape, but there really isn't a physical fitness test. We don't require them to meet an annual physical fitness standard, but we could give people extra pay if they did. So that would be an incentive for them to get in better shape, which would be good for them, good for our injuries probably, good for our disability retirements probably, and would give them more pay. What would that cost? Well, it depends on how much it is and how often it is, but it is something that if we have some what we call one-time funding, little money extra, we could say, okay, for the next year or two, we're going to incentivize people with extra pay for being physically fit. And so we know how much it would cost. That's why we use one-time funding. So that could help.
Let me ask you about, I mentioned the union a moment ago, but let me ask you about what you can do to improve morale within the department. A recent story in the San Jose Mercury by Robert Salonga mentioned, quote-unquote, a deepening morale crisis within the department. Do you agree with that? And if so, what can change to change the morale of the department, whether that's these performance-based moves that you're considering or other things that would just change the tenor, I guess, of what's going on now?
I think the important thing is to lay out a roadmap of how we're going to rebuild the force, rebuild our capacity to respond to crimes better than we're doing now, and to reduce the stress on the workload of officers so they don't have to put in overtime if they don't want to. And I'm trying to lay out that roadmap. I've done it with an op-ed piece that I wrote in the Mercury News, because I think the officers need to know that while we are having difficulties, that they are temporary, that we have a plan, and we're going to move towards rebuilding the capacity of the department, And rebuilding that would include pay raises when we have the money to do pay raises. And so letting everybody know what the plan is, I think, is an important step on the morale, because if officers don't understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, then they are less likely to think we're going to be able to get through it.
Mayor Chuck Reed joining us this hour from the KQED Silicon Valley studio here in downtown San Jose. We'd like to have you join our conversation as well. We're going to open up our phone line shortly. It's 866-733-6786. If you'd like to join our conversation or pose a question to Mayor Chuck Reed, it's 866-733-6786. Were you startled, as everyone seems to have been, when Police Chief Chris Moore announced his resignation?
I was not startled. The chief had been considering retirement for some weeks, although it had been rumored for months, and stories are written about it quite some time ago. So I was not startled. I did not know what day he was going to make his decision. It's a personal decision. I didn't know what day he might decide to leave. So that was news to me. Precisely, but I was not surprised to have him decide, because I knew he had been thinking about it.
Were you bothered by it, disappointed by it? He was only on the job for a little more than a year.
Well, right? I was disappointed that he's not going to stay longer. I had hoped he would stay longer. I expected him to stay longer. But I understand retirement decisions are personal decisions that every police officer and every other person has to make based on personal considerations. I would like to have the chief stay longer. I think he's done a great job in the most difficult circumstances that the management of the police department's ever faced, and it's not an easy job. In fact, that being a police chief in a big city in America is one of the hardest jobs, and he's done a good job in very difficult times.
The head of the Police Officers Association, the union, Jim Unland, said that he thought Chris Moore did this because he didn't have confidence, essentially, in you, in the city's leadership. Did Chris Moore ever say that to you?
No.
And do you think there's any truth to that?
I don't know what was in Chris Moore's head. All I know is what he's told me. It was a personal decision, and I know that he had a very difficult time in the police department. Everybody's seen the difficulties the department has gone through. Whether or not he had confidence in me personally, I don't know. He's never expressed that to me. He certainly expressed his unhappiness and his disappointment with some of the policy decisions that the council made. I was well aware of his concerns about the staffing in the department. I know the union used to beat him up regularly because he was a professional and didn't throw temper tantrums and make a big scene over it. But he was always very straightforward with me on what he thought should be done, even though I occasionally disagreed with him and the council disagreed with him. So I don't know exactly why he made his decision to retire, but I do know that every police officer and everybody eventually faces the same decision. What I have learned is that that decision usually hinges on, for police officers and firefighters, the day you can take home more pay by retiring than you are making while you're working is a very important day, because how do you justify to your family when you're working long, hard hours and taking a lot of difficult jobs, that you really have to do that when you could retire and take home as much pay? Because when you retire, you no longer have to pay for pension.
And was that his situation? Do you know?
I don't know what the math is, but when I look at our officers, I can see that the average retirement's around age 54 with about 28 years of service, and it's pretty much corresponds with, you can make as much money by retiring as when you are working, because you don't have to pay pension, you don't have to pay retiree health care, you don't have to pay union dues and things like that.
Mayor Chuck Reed, San Jose Mayor, joining us as we broadcast from KQED Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose. We're going to take your calls shortly. You can join us at 866-733-6786. One more question on what's next in terms of a police department. Then I want to climb into further this whole question of how cities contend with the pension issue, which you've sort of led the way in. What do you want in an ex-police chief? Do you want someone inside, outside? Do you have a sense of who you need at this point in time for the city of San Jose?
We went through a pretty extensive selection process and outreach process when we selected Chief Moore just about 2 years ago. So we have a pretty good idea of what we need in a police chief. And, of course, we need all that and more. because we know we have very difficult management times with the fiscal issues that have not been resolved. So we need somebody who can manage through that. Whether that'll be somebody from inside or outside, I don't know. We've always had excellent inside candidates, and we're very proud of our department and the men and women. They produce some really good leaders. And so an outsider might do it, an insider might do it. I'm not going to try to predict that.
Let's take a first caller this morning. Eric joins us first from San Jose. Eric, go ahead.
Hi, yes. My question was about pay. We had a neighborhood watch meeting, and one of the neighbors is also a San Jose police officer, and everybody wanted to know why are all of these officers leaving. He said pay is better in other cities. And they said, well, which cities? They said every other city. And since this is the most expensive place to live in the country, one of the most expensive places to live, how can we afford to cut pay? How do we expect people to stay when we're cutting pay when it's more expensive to live here than everywhere else and other places are paying more?
Eric, thank you.
I think if you just look at cost of living, there are many other big cities in the country whose cost of living is equal or higher than ours that don't pay nearly as well as we do. So if you look at it on a national basis, we pay very well. If you look at it on a statewide basis, we pay very well. If you look at a big city basis, we pay very well. San Jose does not pay as well as some of the wealthy cities in our county. That's certainly true, but if you look at the Bay Area, we still pay very well.
Give us some sense so that listeners know, what does a beginning officer get? What does an officer get after he or she has been on the job for 10 years? Give us a range of what people get.
Well, we usually compare top step police officers that they get to over time, and that tends to be the comparison point for you doing salary surveys. So our top step officers are about $97,000 a year in pay, not including overtime and some of the incentive pays. And in the Bay Area, that puts us behind San Francisco, but ahead of others. And in the state, we're probably at the top of the list of the big cities in the state, but compared to Palo Alto, Mountain View, Sunnyvale, we're not paying as much as they do.
Eric, thanks for the call. It raises an interesting sort of conundrum, though, in some ways that you have in San Jose, because story out yesterday that San Jose has the highest median income of any city in America at $77,000. So you have this sense that we're living here in San Jose, that you're living in a city of some means, and yet you have these intense struggles.
Well, you have to look at the data closely, because it is the San Jose metropolitan area that has the second highest household median income in the country after the D.C. metropolitan area. And so within Santa Clara County, you have some wide disparities of income. And all you have to do is look at the per capita revenues of San Jose compared to the other cities in the county. You realize that San Jose has a lot less money per person to spend. But yet we have to compete in the same labor market for police officers and firefighters. But the real question is, what is the relevant labor market? Is it the entire Bay Area, or is it only a few cities around us in Santa Clara County? And we pull people from all over the country for our police department. In fact, people don't even have to live in San Jose or Santa Clara County. They can live where it's cheaper to live, and probably about half of officers and two-thirds of our firefighters don't even live in San Jose.
San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. You can post your questions on our Facebook page or our website as well. When we return, we'll talk more about police issues, as well as the question of public employee benefits and a variety of other things that are facing the city of San Jose, as we broadcast from KQED, Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny from KQED, Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose. San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed is our guest. We welcome your calls to our conversation, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org as well. Let's take another caller. Jack in San Jose joins us next. Jack, go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. I'm just curious why your response when asked about the increase in crimes, whether it be a robbery, a murder, or burglary, your canned response is always pension reform instead of candid explanations about poor officer retention, low officer morale, and a non-retention workforce. Why do you always revert to pension reform instead of just being candid?
Well, it's because pensions is the largest single factor in the skyrocketing costs that we've incurred over the last decade that have required us to reduce our workforce by 2,000 people. We've gone from 7,400 to 5,400 workers, and if you look at the reasons for that, you'll see that pension costs have gone from $73 million a year to $245 million a year, and our independent retirement board's actuaries say it's going to keep going up for another decade. So when you're trying to solve a problem, you have to tackle the largest single factor. Now, there are other factors, of course, in rising costs because wages also went up quite a bit, but pension is the elephant in the room. You have to deal with that if you're going to solve the problem, and I'm committed to solving the problem so that we can provide services to the people of San Jose. That's our mission.
It's interesting, just to play off of the phrase you just used, the elephant in the room, because if you look at this in political terms, it's not something that Democrats tend to want to deal with very directly. It's an issue that has been largely avoided in many ways. I'm just curious about your taking this on as a Democrat to challenge what is in effect largely an unpopular view for most Democrats to buck public employee unions.
Well, I think most Democrats would like to avoid it for a lot of reasons, but if you look at the Democrats that have taken on the issue, they tend to be big city mayors. Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, Antonio Villaraigosa in L.A. are just two of the examples. And the reason,
and of course the governor has as well.
Certainly Governor Jerry Brown. But the mayors have been at the forefront of this just because when you start spending more than 20% of your general fund on retirement benefits, you're squeezing out other services. And so just as San Jose is spending more than 20% and squeezing out services, L.A. is experiencing the same problem. And so Rahm Emanuel has taken on the issue in Chicago just because it's a really big issue. And mayors have a tough time avoiding issues. Unlike other levels of government, we can't just talk about it. We have to do something to solve the problem.
It's an interesting sense, and I'm curious about whether you see a sort of sea change in this. There's some news articles written in the last few days about now teachers' unions in some places courting Republicans in a way that has not been seen before. You certainly see perhaps the aftermath of that in the city of Chicago. Do you see a change in this? Are we at a kind of tipping point in the way in which this aligns in a political way?
Well, I hope we have reached a tipping point. And I think the tipping point is the day that our public sector unions realized that the people who are going to get hammered when these plans fail are public sector employees. Our younger employees get that. They understand that. Unfortunately, the union leadership tends to be a little older, a little closer to retirement. They're not the ones who are going to necessarily get hammered. I guess they figure they'll die before the money runs out. That's not a safe bet, I don't think. But the places where the plans have failed, like Central Falls, Rhode Island, a city that called up its retirees one day and said, sorry, we can only pay you half of what we were paying you because we're running out of money. I don't want that ever to happen to the employees of San Jose, and I think across the country there are unions, public sector unions, that are realizing that they need to do some action now so that they'll get paid when they retire everything that they've earned.
A couple of questions coming in via email, and this gets back to the question that was raised earlier about this is an expensive city to live in. We have high median age wages. Why aren't things aligning better? Sam writes in, San Jose is one of the richest cities in the nation. There's plenty of money. So why are services being cut?
Well, there's not plenty of money. There may be plenty of money in the pockets of people who live here, but they don't necessarily give all that money to the government. They certainly don't give it all to the city of San Jose. And the wealth is not evenly distributed within Santa Clara County. All you have to do is look at the relative incomes in other cities. And the per capita revenues of San Jose are much less than the per capita revenues of the surrounding cities. So while there's plenty of wealth around here, it doesn't mean that the city of San Jose is a wealthy city.
Is this just a situation where chickens have come home to roost, that the Californians in general, perhaps people in Santa Clara County along with others, just were saying, we're doing fine. We live in this progressive, wealthy place. These problems aren't ours. And now they're finally here?
Well, the problems are certainly here. City problems are quite a bit different from state problems in terms of revenues and everything else, but we have to be in the state of California that is having a tough time managing itself and dealing with fiscal problems. But cities are much more direct. That's why mayors tend to be pragmatic realists, is because we can't avoid the problems. We have to take them on. It's very difficult for us to borrow money like the state government can do, and unfortunately, we don't get to print money like the federal government.
Here's a problem. Valentine writes in, I live in San Jose with my wife and two young children. Our apartment was burglarized in July. The officer who came said all we could do was report the stolen items. There's too few detectives, and so they would not be able to investigate. I don't want my children to grow up in such an environment, so we'll be moving out of San Jose when our lease expires.
Well, unfortunately, burglaries have gone up. Burglaries have been going up generally for quite a few years as property crimes have increased. And we made a conscious decision in the city of San Jose over the last decade, as we shrank our police force, that we would focus our resources on violent crimes, prosecuting, catching, and preventing violent crimes. That was a priority of Chief Moore and Chief Davis and Chief Lansdowne, and the council approved that because the violent crimes are the most troublesome, and that's what we need to do. But as we've shrunk our police department due to skyrocketing costs, we have transferred people out of property crimes-related work into violent crimes-related work, patrol. And that means there are less officers to deal with the property crimes. We do not have enough officers on the San Jose Police Force. The 5% below authorized staffing is too few. The authorized staffing level is too few. We need to begin to move back to a higher number because even though their officers are doing a great job, they're working hard, and we're getting control over things, there are many, many things that we can't respond to adequately, and property crimes is one of those areas.
But respond, if you would, more directly to Valentine. Understanding all of that and all of those difficulties and the priorities that you and police officers have to face in terms of different levels of crime, Valentine's saying he's going to move out of San Jose because he doesn't want his kids to grow up in a place where burglaries don't count.
Well, that's a personal choice. Everybody will make that decision, but you might want to check around, because if you look at the more recent data, there have been spikes in burglaries throughout the county and throughout the state for reasons that we don't fully understand yet. Palo Alto had one of the largest spikes in burglaries recently, and some people blame that on realignment, which is certainly changing the dynamics throughout the state. Whether or not it's a factor in that, we don't yet know. So you just got to check around and make your personal decisions. There are absolutely many great reasons to be in San Jose, and reasons to live in other cities as well, and that's a personal decision.
But with all due respect, Mr. Mayor, that doesn't sound very sympathetic. Check around, Valentine. Make your own personal choice. I mean, doesn't that concern you that people would make that sort of statement and have that sort of feeling about the city?
It concerns me. We don't have enough police officers. We cannot adequately respond to property crimes. We need more police officers, and the question is, how do we get more police officers? How do we afford more police officers? We're recruiting and hiring officers to get back up to authorized strength to the 1,100, but 1,100 is not large enough for a city this size, I don't think, although on a per call, per officer, a crime per officer basis, we're staffed as well as some cities, but it's not enough. I understand that. I agree. It's one of the few things I think that maybe Jim Unlin and I agree upon, is that we need more officers. The question is, how do we get there? How do we pay for them? And we have made some policy decisions. We could close all the libraries and generate enough funding to give all the police officers a 10% raise. That doesn't reflect the values and priorities of my community, and the council is not going to support that. But we are looking for ways to get more revenues so that we can hire more police officers, which is something that we need to do.
Mayor Chuck Reed joining us this hour from KQED Silicon Valley in downtown San Jose. 866-733-6786, the number if you want to pose a question for the mayor. Let's go to our next caller here in San Jose. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, I wanted to ask you sort of a comment and wanted to get your reaction. I'm actually a big fan of, well, big fan. I'm in agreement with you on the pension issue. I think you're right. I think most people who don't agree don't fully understand, and so I'm in agreement. A big objection that I have, though, is kind of how you go about marketing the issue yourself, our city. I think that you're a really matter-of-fact, you talked about Police Chief Moore being professional, and I think that you're, you know, even on this program, you're very straightforward, you're to the point, and I think that does you a disservice, and I think it actually does the city a disservice, as we are a bigger city than San Francisco, but yet we're still the little brother in the Bay Area. And I think it relates to this issue, it relates to other issues. It's just, you know, you can't just be right on the facts. You also have to think about how it's marketed, how it's presented, and how we do that as, in general as a city. And I think, you know, on this issue, I think we're losing on just being too matter-of-fact, too straightforward, which, you know, it seems like a terrible saying that that's a problem, but it seems to be a problem with the way that you carry yourself as well. I just think your demeanor actually impacts this issue and other issues in the city, and I wanted to get your reaction to that.
Well, I appreciate the comments. I think dealing with the facts and being straightforward is the best way to deal with any problem. And other people may approach it differently. I guess the question is, who are we marketing to? What's the target audience? And what are we trying to do? If you're going to have a marketing strategy, that's a key part of it. But, you know, my strategy is not a marketing strategy. My strategy is a problem-solving strategy. And I believe in taking on the issues straightforward and being truthful and just laying it out there and then having the debate on the merits. That may not satisfy some people, but that's pretty much the way I do it.
I think the color race is an interesting point, and if I could make a comparison, it's a bit like the difference between a Michael Dukakis and a Bill Clinton. If there's a continuum of approaches, you aren't someone, it doesn't seem like, who focuses on the sort of Bill Clinton who could charm anyone, even around this particular issue. Do you think that's an important quality for a leader to have?
It's certainly a helpful quality. It's not the only quality that a leader needs. If I was as good as Bill Clinton, I would readily be able to do that. But there aren't very many people who are as good as Bill Clinton at what he does.
What are your own goals for these next 2 years, final 2 years of your two terms? And how will you go about sort of facing this difficult time? Do you have specific things that you want to try to get done, whether it's this issue of getting your fiscal house in order or contending with, obviously, a variety of other issues that are before the city of San Jose?
I had somebody tell me a few days ago that what I was doing was going to make it possible for the next mayor to dream. And so there are problems that we have to solve. We have to deal with these fiscal issues. And I intend to do that, get the Measure B stuff implemented, get the savings so that the next mayor and the next council can talk about how we begin to restore services, where we restore those services, and what we can do to move beyond the fiscal crisis. But first you have to solve the problem, and that's the highest on my list because I want to place the city in a strong fiscal condition so the next mayor can focus on other things besides trying to avoid bankruptcy or service level insolvency.
Does that mean in another life, like around 2020, you'd like to come back and be mayor again?
I don't think so. You know, Jerry Brown's proved it can be done. I think it was 28 years between his second term and his third term, but I don't aspire to do that. No, I think that we'll leave that to Governor Brown.
Back to our callers. Bob joins us next in San Jose. Bob, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's a pleasure to be listening to you on this program. My question just relates to the police helicopter. I was wondering whether you could do a cost benefit analysis of the helicopter. You know, how much does it cost every year? Can you name any specific instances where, you know, the helicopters actually resulted in you know, crime solving, because it seems to me that the helicopter flies around. I live in Willow Glen personally, and it's just sort of a pet peeve to see this helicopter flying over my house. I mean, it seems like it's an invasion of privacy. So I was just curious as to, you know, why do we have the helicopter? How much does it cost? And would you ever consider grounding it as part of, you know, a revenue reduction solution? Thank you.
We have grounded the helicopter in the past. It is back flying on a reduced schedule basis. You know, that's a decision by the chief, but it has proven itself to be worthwhile in a couple of different circumstances that are hard to replicate any other way. First is in a high-speed chase. High-speed chases are very dangerous, and if you have a helicopter involved in it, the officers on the ground can take it easy, and the helicopter can track the vehicles, and that's very helpful. The second, it has been helpful in finding lost children, and sometimes like that when it's useful, and it's a backup for the officers, and when appropriately used, it can be an extension of what the officers are doing. But it also is very expensive, and that's why we had to ground it a while back, and we've gradually begun to increase the amount of flying in order to have it as a tool in the department. So there's some tools you don't use as often as you need, but when you need them, they're very, very helpful, and that's one of them. But it's always a choice between, well, shall we eliminate the helicopter service and have a few more officers, or shall we have somebody who helps the officers on the ground and extends the officers' reach? And, you know, that's a choice we have to make every budget cycle.
Bob, thanks for the call. You said your position in part, or your job in part, is to make it possible for the next mayor to dream. But imagine for a moment that you could dream. What is it that you'd like to do that you can't right now?
I'd like to grow the police department for starters. I'd like to have all the fire stations open. I'd like to have the libraries open full time. I'd like to have our community centers operating full time. Officially and formally, I'm committed to restoring services that the city of San Jose had in January of 2011. That is the fiscal reform plan that the council adopted. So that's step one. It's not that that level of service is anything to brag about, but it's a lot better than we have now. So I would go beyond that. I would certainly want a police department that maybe is not back to 1,400, but certainly more than 1,100. The chief the other day said he thought maybe he used to think 1,100 was the minimum number. Now he thinks maybe 1,200, 1,250 is the minimum number. I don't know what the minimum number is, but I know we don't have enough now. So I'd like to restore the services to people of San Jose that we've lost over the last decade. That's a pretty big dream because we lost a lot.
Go to our next caller. Denise in Santa Clara joins us next. Denise, go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for taking my call. Mayor Reed, you know, you're kind of in the twilight of your career now. You've described yourself as a pragmatic realist. What I want to know is, how do you justify not signing on with other mayors supporting gay marriage? How do you justify that?
You know, gay marriage is going to be decided in California by the U.S. Supreme Court. Either they're going to take the Ninth Circuit case up on appeal, or they're going to decline to take it, in which case the Ninth Circuit opinion would be binding on all of California as well as the rest of the Ninth Circuit. So whether or not we're going to have gay marriage is going to be decided by that action. And my position is, as a mayor, we need to follow the law. Whatever California law is, that's what we need to do. If California law recognizes gay marriage, then that's fine. If it doesn't recognize gay marriage, that's fine. And so I think that's the position I have been in and I will be in. And it's up to the Supreme Court. It's out of my hands and out of the hands of the people. So I'm happy to follow the law because I think that's part of what I have to do as a mayor.
Is your sense then, with this issue or perhaps other social issues, Mayor Reed, that's just really not your purview, that you're going to focus on the sort of nitty-gritty issues that will make San Jose work or not work and let everyone else kind of contend with those sorts of questions?
Well, that has been my approach to the job. I mean, there are just so many things that are interesting that we could get engaged in as a city, but you have to focus on your core mission of providing services to the people. And I think one of the things that mayors have to do is decide what's important to the people and not get dragged off into peripheral issues. However important and meaningful they may be to everybody else, If you do that, then you get distracted from dealing with your own problems. So there have been many times I've just said, you know, we don't want to have some things on the council agenda because it's not our decision. And even though people might get excited about it, we have to focus on solving our problems. And this is one that's not our decision. We don't issue marriage licenses, and others are going to make the decision. And so everybody's free to have their own opinion and state their position, but we shouldn't spend a lot of San Jose city time to deal with it.
You just used the words peripheral issue. Do you think of gay marriage being a peripheral issue when it comes to your job?
Well, it's peripheral to the city of San Jose because we don't issue marriage licenses. So in San Jose, we have recognized domestic partners. We've extended benefits to domestic partners so that they're treated fairly and equally under San Jose benefits. So there are some parts of it that are directly related to the city of San Jose, and we've taken those on. And I've supported the extension of benefits to domestic partners to equalize that. We've taken some stands against allowing people to harass or intimidate gay and lesbians with some, you know, contract issues. So where that's been directly related to the city, we've done that. But to get into the fight over gay marriage, and we don't issue gay marriages, is peripheral to the mission of the city.
Message here from Rick, who emails in, I feel sorry for union retirees. So in the worst case scenario, if the city defaults on their retirements, they end up with $50,000 per year rather than $100,000 a year. Meanwhile, I have to wait until I'm 66 to just get $23,000. So I assume Rick is being sarcastic when he feels sorry for, when he's saying he feels sorry for union retirees. But he mentions the word if the city defaults. Is there any danger of that in terms of having to default on your pension obligations?
No, I think we have, with Measure B and the other fiscal reforms we've done, made it possible for people not to have to worry about that. Of course, we need to implement Measure B. But if you look at what's happened in other cities, when they run out of money, they don't pay their retirees. And that's happened in multiple places around the country. And I want our city employees to get paid every dollar that they've earned. And I don't want to go to them someday and say, oh, we're running out of money, so we got to cut your payments in half. That's been done elsewhere, and I think that's wrong. But in order to make sure everybody gets paid what they've earned, we need to take actions now to deal with the problem instead of just sort of kicking it down the road until it gets so big that you have to take the route that Stockton took, which is to go into bankruptcy court.
What's the legal status? There have been various challenges to Measure B. When will those be resolved? Will it have an impact on what you can implement in terms of waiting for those judicial decisions?
There have been about a half a dozen lawsuits filed over Measure B. One of those was filed by the city of San Jose in order to get a court ruling on it, because we need a court ruling sooner rather than later so that we can implement. Those cases are all in the preliminary phases of getting it sorted out procedurally. We do anticipate that the city of San Jose will be filing a motion for summary judgment in the state court actions to try to get an early ruling on some of the legal issues, because we do want to implement Measure B and get the savings in place. We're not counting those savings. We're not spending those savings. But the first year savings will be about $25 million, and then that will go up basically every year for 30 years or so until it reaches about $185 million a year. And that will allow us to begin to restore some of the services, restore some of the pay, and basically be able to do the kind of service work that we should as a city.
Let's take one more call. Brian in San Jose joins us next. Brian, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Hey, I just wanted to follow up on the previous caller's remark about the mayor's canned pension response to all the problems. I've been a policeman in San Jose for 27 years now, so I'm one of the last few dinosaurs there that has seen this transformation from basically start to finish, or not finished yet. But anyways, my point is the pension, or Measure B as a whole, is the reason why you're having a problem with retention of officers, not necessarily just the retirement benefit. The union was prepared to meet and work out a deal because they knew there was a problem there as well. The problem arises when you take a political stance the way you did, which now has made the job of a police officer much more difficult in the city of San Jose, because the public views us in a much different light. So when we go on a typical call, it's not the same. The other point I'd like to make is that most officers that are leaving now aren't leaving necessarily because of the pension adjustment. They're leaving because of a combination of things. For example, the disability measure in the pension, that basically has eliminated any disability protection per officer. And I know the mayor's going to say, no, they have the same standard of disability.
Brian, I'm sorry to interrupt, Brian, but I'm going to hold you there because we're very short on time, and it's a complicated question that you're raising. But let me allow the mayor to respond to what you've outlined so far.
Well, I'm not sure which part to respond to. So let me just talk about the fact that we have hundreds of officers less than we had 10 years ago because costs have gone up dramatically. Even though we increased the funding in the police department, we have less officers. So what is the problem? The problem is costs. Costs have gone up. We have to control the costs. Now, certainly that can have an adverse impact on the officers. Taking a 10% pay cut had an adverse impact on officers. But the alternative to the 10% pay cut was to lay off another 150 police officers, and therefore we'd have less officers than we have today.
Within the calls that we've received this morning and the stack of email around me, there's a very divided sense. People admiring what you've done, people saying this is terrible for the city and siding on the union side of this. Do you see part of your job, as we come back to that and conclude our program, over the next 2 years of trying to heal that sort of division within the city?
Well, certainly. We need to do that. I got reelected with about 75% yes vote. Measure B got approved with nearly 70% yes vote. So the vast majority of people understand the problem, understand that I'm trying to solve the problem. They may not agree with me 100%. But my job is to try to get beyond that, to get people to move on and focus on what we're going to do to improve the situation in the city of San Jose. And yes, that's part of my job over the next 2 years.
Mayor Chuck Reed, Mayor of San Jose, joining us this morning from KQED Silicon Valley here in downtown San Jose. Mayor Reed, thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to do it.
Forum is produced by Judy Camp. Noguchi, our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman are our engineers. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.